This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We heard Navy veteran Stan Smith explain his ongoing efforts to track down World War II veterans and record their stories. Now we're going to get to know one of those veterans he's interviewed. Pearl Harbor survivor Stu Headley is 95 years old, but he still has endless energy and a relentless drive to educate people about Pearl Harbor and honor those who never got to come home. But to really have perspective on Stu's story, we have to go back to the beginning. I guess you were pretty much destined for life at sea with your dad's background in naval aviation.
That's right. My dad was a lieutenant commander in the Air Force in World War I. And during the time I was born, he was training pilots at Pensacola.
What were they flying then?
Jennies.
Yeah.
He told me, fly by the seat of your pants. And when he showed me one at the Buffalo Airport, I knew what he meant.
Yeah, and most people have probably heard that phrase, but they don't realize there actually was a realistic, practical origin of it.
Yeah.
So did you grow up thinking the Navy was going to be your destination someday?
From the day I was born, I was going to be Navy because I was born on a yacht.
So you have one of those baby pictures of you in a sailor uniform?
Nope. I did, but somebody stole my calendar and all that. My grandmother's picture was in there, my picture when I was 6 years old.
Mm.
I lost a great deal when I lost that. But the Lord took it. He had a purpose, so I let it go.
Well, and clearly there's that element to your story, as we're going to hear. And I don't want to jump too quickly past anything important. I do understand that you lost your mother at a very young age.
She left us when I was a year old. She left my dad because of the fact that she thought she was going to be wealthy. And when my father's father died, two lawyers got a hold of the estate and chewed it up. But they were very, well, I should say, they took in consideration my grandmother because she was set for life.
Mm.
But everything else they got away with until 1932, when my oldest uncle, my father's oldest brother, put him in state prison, Attica State Prison, for 25 years. And not only them, but the mayor of Buffalo went into prison and 27 of the city officials went to jail.
Corruption scandal?
When my uncle got through with him, yeah.
Wow. So you had a little bit of a tumultuous childhood.
Yeah. Now, I was speaking to about 35 or 40 optimists, and I asked them, how many of you are really an optimist? Let me tell you what an optimist is. When I was 6 years old, I was sitting on my girlfriend's doorstep, and I asked her, I said, Margaret, what do you want to be when you grow up? She said, I never thought of it. Do you know what you want to do? I said, yeah, join the Navy, go around the world and marry you. Well, I joined the Navy, and I went around the world, but I didn't marry her. Because 1932, she was sent back to Canada as a deportee. But my goal was the Naval Academy, because Congressman Biter, who was a friend of my father's, told him, he said, Ray, if Stuart will stay in school, keep up his grades, I'll appoint him to the academy.
Mm-hmm.
That was my goal. And from the day I entered my freshman year, I set my goal to be on the honor roll, 90 and above. And I held on to that right through till my senior year. Well, I had a fight with my stepmother, almost killed her, and I went to a total failure in 3 months.
Mm.
And I told my dad, I got to get out of the house. Well, he says, what do you want to do? I want to join the Navy. So he took me down to the recruiting office. I asked the chief, you got a 20-year contract? He's used being a smart aleck. I says, no. I says, I read the brochure. You do 20 years and retire. That's what I'm going to do. He says, I've heard that before. Take your test. So I sat down and took my test, and I come out with flying colors on my test. So the chief said, go get a bite to eat. Come back, and you'll get a physical. Well, I walked into the doctor's office. He took one look at me. He said, son, we can't take you. You're too small. I was 4'11". This is a picture of me in my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can pick me out.
Right on the right?
Right
there.
See you right here. That's me.
Yeah.
I was the smallest kid in high school. So I asked the chief, I said, is there somebody I can talk to? He said, well, I'll let you talk to the commander. So I went in and I told the commander what had happened. And I said, I don't know why they don't give the physical first and then the test, you know. He laughed. And he said, son, you're really serious about being in the Navy? I said, yes, sir. Well, he said, Roosevelt has started a new organization, but you're not qualified to go because you're not on welfare or relief. And he said, that organization is the Civilian Conservation Corps. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to write a letter to whom it may concern that we're sending you there to build you up physically, mentally, and spiritually. So off I went to the CCCs. The day I got there, I stood alongside of my locker and drew a pencil mark. And I figured every 30 days I'm going to stand along. And as soon as I'm 5'2", I'm going to be on my way to Buffalo. Well, the next morning, right after breakfast, they said, Headley, grab an axe. You're going to chop down trees. So that was my first experience in the CCCs.
And where were you? Where was this?
Burdett, New York.
All right.
In the Finger Lake region.
Uh-huh.
And an amazing thing because what do you notice there?
Well, this is a picture of a couple guys looking like lumberjacks, and you're standing on a pretty tall log, so you're a lot taller than the other guy.
And what else do you notice?
A milk can? What's that big jug in the foreground?
That's a milk can.
Yeah.
But what do you notice about me?
You look a little bigger. You're a little stronger. You got your sailor hat on.
I got a sailor hat on. Right?
In the CCCs, in the middle of the forest, a lumberjack has a sailor hat on.
Right.
So you wore that every day or what?
So, well, I did for about 3 months. That was the physical.
Uh-huh.
Colonel Phillips called me into the office, and he said, Headley, we see you have quite an aptitude for mathematics. How would you like to be a surveyor? You train me, and I'll do it. So they trained me, and the rest of my time in the CCCs, I was a surveyor. Well, that was the mental part. I was laying out roads and aqueducts and water troughs and different things that they needed to have surveyed. And I enjoyed that. But I also was marking off every month. Well, before that happened, though, in September, I met this girl, Lois. We were having a soda in the soda shop. And I asked her if I could sit down with her, and she says, sure. So in the process of the conversation, she said, Stuart, would you go to church with me on Sunday? Church? But I wanted to be with her, so I went. And that went on for several months, and they had just come out with a new drink called Cherry Coke. And we were having one, and we were discussing activities and such, and she said, Stuart, would you go to church with me Wednesday night? Who goes to church on Wednesday? But, yes, I'll go with you, because I was thinking of being with her. I went. That was September 1939, and I walked in, and here are newspaper articles all around the wall of the speaker, former gangster. He is the enforcer for the Dutch Schultz mob, Beer Baron, New York City. And so he started talking, and he said, I just got released from Sing Sing. Roosevelt gave me a full pardon. But he says, let me share with you. I have murdered 7 men. Ooh. And he said, let me explain. I put them in a cement bucket and dumped them in the Hudson River. Now, let me clarify that for you. That was Charlie Lucky Luciano's gang, Al Capone's gang, the Purple Gang, and the Palumbo Gang that were muscling in on Dutch Schultz. He was his enforcer. And he made the remark, it was not for those crimes that I'll be kept out of heaven. And he took his hand and he said, the only thing that'll keep any of you out of heaven is if you don't believe that Jesus Christ paid the penalty for your sin and your crime. I sat there alongside of Lois, and I didn't even realize she was sitting there. I knew I was a liar, I was a cheat, I was a thief, I swore, I drank, I smoked. I couldn't sit in my seat. I came forward. He came down off the platform. asked me why I came forward, and I told him, I says, I want to know that Christ just like you know him. So he said, son, the words that you're going to say with your mouth are not going to save you. The thing that saves you is the attitude of your heart. I told him, I mean business. So he says, okay. So then he prayed the sinner's prayer. I prayed it with him, and I felt completely clean. And when I walked out of that place that day, Lois was a forgotten issue. Later learned, though, that she became a pilot that flew planes to Europe. She ferried them over, and then I lost track of her.
She was a WASP during the
WASP,
war?
WASP, yeah. Uh-huh. So I was 5'2", eyes of blue, 122 pounds, hitchhiked to Buffalo, New York, and on August 20th, 1940, I shipped into the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So off to Newport, Rhode Island I went. I was there from August till October. And October the 23rd, the chief got us all together and told us where we were being assigned to. Well, there were about 40 of us that were going to the West Coast, to the USS West Virginia. Well, I asked the chief, I didn't smart off to him, but I asked him, why in the world do they send us all the way to the Pacific coast when we're right here on the Atlantic? Why don't they send? That's so you can't go home every night. Well, it made sense. So I got aboard the USS West Virginia, beautiful battleship. When I went aboard the West Virginia, I went aboard on my birthday, October 29th, 1940. And I wasn't dry behind the ears yet, and I was still a cocky little guy. And I made my way to the pilot house. And when I got there, the officer of deck said, what's your name, son? I says, Stuart Headley. Where's the steering wheel? He says, the what? I says, the steering wheel. He says, you're looking at it. And it was like a streetcar controller.
Right.
And in 2 weeks, I'm going to be on that, but it's called a helm, not a steering wheel. So I was a helmsman. Well, first of all, when we got aboard the Weavy, a bunch of my buddies said, Stu, let's go to Hollywood. I said, nope. Well, how about Los Angeles? Nope. Well, where are you going? I'm going to hitchhike to San Diego. I says, we were supposed to move out here in 1934 with the Consolidated Aircraft. My father worked for Reuben Fleet, and my stepmother would not go, because her mother was 93 and she was ill. Mm. And so Reuben and the whole family and practically everybody that worked for him came out here. And so I hitchhiked down here to San Diego, and I got on the bus and I said, would you take me out to La Jolla? He says, son, it's not La Jolla, it's La Jolla. And he's, if you're going out east, it's not El Cajon, it's El Cajon. I got a lesson in education, hurry. Well, I walked all around the receiving station, and it was beautiful. The flowers were treated, the grass was mowed, and the buildings were so far removed from what it was in Newport, Rhode Island, because they were all brick, and they had been there for ages. And as I was walking down Rosecrans Boulevard, I said, Lord, if I ever retire, I want to retire here in San Diego. Forgot all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got back aboard the ship. I found my mother after 18 years.
Wow.
And that was quite a surprise.
She was in Los Angeles?
She lived in San Gabriel. But it was quite an experience, because I was to meet her Christmas Day at the P.E. Depot. And I got there about 10:30, walked up and down, because she was going to meet me at 12 o'clock noon. And it was getting near noon, and I thought, she's not going to show up, so I'll take. And I started to go out the door, and this woman come rushing in, threw her arms around me, gave me a great big kiss, and I'm pushing her away because I didn't know who she was. And she said, son, you haven't changed a bit except grown up.
And you hadn't seen her since you were...
I had not seen her because, see, I was only a year old.
Right.
And I did not remember anything.
Wow.
So as it turned out, she said, we're not going to have no tears. I'm going to take you home. We're going to have a Christmas dinner. And she said, do you know you've got a leave coming? I says, what do you mean? She says, when you go back aboard ship, she knew more about the Navy than I did. But I guess that was because of my dad.
Sure.
So anyhow, I had from the 25th till January the 1st with my mother. We went up to the High Sierras. We went to Yosemite. And we saw the firefall.
Wow.
Where they dropped the bark from the dome.
You know, they don't do that anymore. I've always wished I could go back in time and see that.
It was amazing because the moment they dropped that bark, the ranger starts to whistle the Indian love call. And as he hits the very last note, the bark extinguishes. Oh, man, it's awesome. Well, when I got back aboard ship, the chief told us, we're getting underway on January 3rd for the Panama Canal. We're joining the Atlantic Fleet. Well, I learned on January the 3rd, orders can change in 5 minutes because we were up anchoring, pulling up both anchors, and the captain, Captain Goodall, announced over the loudspeaker, our orders have been changed. Instead of going to the Atlantic, we're going straight to Pearl Harbor. The whole fleet was moving to Pearl.
And that's exactly where he would be a year later on a Sunday morning that changed the world. When we come back, the perspective Stu has on Pearl Harbor, thanks to his coming face-to-face with one of the Japanese masterminds of the attack. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.